Hello, can I speak to Chris Lawrence, please?
Who's calling?
It's Lawrence Rafferty, supposedly expecting my call. Helena Cotton asked me to give him a ring.
Oh, sorry, I didn't catch your name, sir.
Lawrence Rafferty?
Lawrence Rafferty, okay, I was trying
That's
to pick you
correct.
through.
Thank you very much. Hello, is that Chris? Chris, how you doing? It's Lord Trafferty. Helena Cotton asked me to give you a ring on Friday. First of all, just is there anything you want to ask me or? I don't think so. Okay. Right. Basically, I've been seeing a lot of numbers about that seem to come from your particular grouping regarding the adverse reactions in pet microchip implants. I'm just really wondering how you arrive at the numbers, really. That would be essentially what I'm looking for. I know that you're part of the microchip advisory group. I was wondering how you actually measure, excuse me, the adverse reactions. You know, what sort of mechanism do you have in place to gather that information? So it's when you would say encouraged, would it be the case where you would actively chase figures, or is it just the case where they report in? Well, would you sort of be asking them, for instance? I mean, okay, I'll explain to you where I'm coming from first of all, because I don't want to ambush you with something. I looked at a study that was done on a dog called Leon, at one stage of a French bulldog. Have you come across that study at all? No. Well, it was a lady who owned a French bulldog, and what happened was she had tried at every turn to report an adverse reaction, and she just simply couldn't get it reported. Nobody would take the details. I could email it to you if it was
Well, I
useful.
mean, there's no restriction on who reports adverse reaction. The reaction form is on the BSAVA website. You simply
Okay.
have to download it and send it off.
But she did report it. Well, I mean, she's in France, first of all, so she couldn't report it to the British. Reporting system. But the point is that if you're gathering information coming in that way, and I used to work in a department that collated health service statistics. I worked for local community information development for 3.5 years. Really, we would spend a lot of time trying to chase up figures to get forms in about reporting. So it's my kind of thing is it being underreported? And it, it's the difficulty is that in a lot of occasions, certainly I understand that pet microchipping is an emotive issue from both ends, really. I'll explain to you my own experience of it and why I'm sort of doing what I'm doing now. I went along to a local meeting where those figures were being used, likely were gathered from peer-reviewed scientific data. And when I finally looked at how they were being used, I said, well, hang on a second. I mean, that's self-reporting, really. And really, this was being used to justify bringing in compulsory microchipping in Northern Ireland, I was completely safe.
Right.
And that was a really worrying thing, because obviously we really haven't done any lifetime studies of dogs yet to see if it is safe. There has been a recommendation to do a 20-year study, but it's not been done, so...
Here you are with something like 400 reports of adverse reactions over a period of 14 years, during which time probably 5 million chips have been implanted in dogs and cats.
Right.
So it depends how much you want to estimate the underreporting is.
Well,
if it's 10 underreporting 10 times, that's 4,000 out of 5 million.
Mm. Certainly.
Which is still a relatively small proportion.
But we don't really know how much underreporting there's been. One of the interesting things is, and this is the Vassalieri study that I read in 2004, and I'll read you a wee bit of it, because I'm not a vet and you are, so maybe you can take something out of it, I can't. Prior to the surgery, the dog had shown no visible signs of cancer other than an unusual lump. Blood tests run on the dog, including a complete preoperative blood count and serum biochemistry analysis, did not detect that the mass was malignant. Thoracic radiographs.
There wasn't.
The whole thing is that basically, unless every vet was autopsying lumps and biopsying lumps, which they're not, then we wouldn't know at all how much cancer this was responsible for, particularly with the migration. There's just no, it's unknowable. And there's a very high proportion of dogs that have cancer, surely.
Yeah, a significant proportion of dogs die of cancer.
Right.
Neither of those are likely in any way to be related to microchips.
But
no, and I mean, of those 400 reports, I think there are two or perhaps three reports of tumours at the site of a microchip.
Right.
If the tumour is at the site of the microchip, doesn't prove that it's the microchip that's causing the tumour.
Of course, it's not proof. But then you see, I'm not arguing to take chips off the market at all. I think chips are a useful tool, particularly for rabies and people going abroad. What I am arguing against is compulsory microchipping, particularly in the light that some dogs are much more likely to get cancer than other dogs, according to other reports. Like, I think it was Bill Masters or whatever, you know.
Flat-coat retrievers and boxers are renowned for getting skin tumours or variety tumours and sarcomas. There's very good evidence for that, but there is no evidence that microchips are involved in any way in any of that.
Not at all, but there's no evidence really before. It's not, I mean, it's a case of if we're going to make it compulsory. This is my, it's the definition of compulsory. So if an owner decides, fair enough, I want to do this, this is something I want to do, and I feel that it's part of responsible dog ownership, to me, I think that's fair enough. Go ahead and take that risk, because there is a risk factor. If on the other hand, like myself, and I'll explain to you why I don't want to do it for at least one of my dogs, I have a dog that seems to develop very severe immune reactions to almost anything. You know, she's a Kerry Blue, and I clip her with a longer blade, so I don't actually nick the skin, because it swells up into massive lumps if you do.
Right.
I'm ridiculously careful about every single thing to do with that. So I just feel that if she does have some extra immune reaction, it may cause a problem. And I would like to retain the right in that case, and probably other people who have boxers, rightly or wrongly, and whether there is medical evidence or not, or veterinary evidence or not, I'd love to retain the right to just say, no, I don't want to do this for that dog. And this is really the difference. It's when people start bringing in things that say, you must, you have to, it's an absolute. The other thing is that once you make microchipping compulsory, Chris, we're looking at a situation where it's quite an easy technology to circumnavigate.
Come on.
Oh, do you want me to explain to you how easy it is? There's a piece of software on the internet at the moment, and there's also a hardware wiring diagram that you can basically clone the chip. It's very, very simple. Very simple. I mean, possibly not yourself if you're not an electronics expert, but you know, I live in a country that has a severe history of people with very, very good electronics background building everything from bombs to anything else. Are you telling me they really couldn't work out some way around RFID? Because I can tell you they can't.
Yeah, I am. I'm absolutely positive that you could not change the number in the chip.
You can't change the number in the chip, but you can take the number and duplicate it out to 100 other chips.
Yeah. Yeah, of course you can.
Okay, well, so if you do that, say for example, let's talk about dog fighting, for instance, which is a big problem over here, as I'm sure you know, unfortunately. But if you have one dog that's it's a legal Staffordshire Bull Terrier, if you like, and you then take that and you take the chip number out of that dog and you put it in another dog that looks reasonably similar, right? Then you all of a sudden you have a dog that's totally legal. You can have one dog that's scarred and living in a shed and very badly abused. You can have another dog that's living a perfectly normal life at home. And to be honest with you, if the owner's ever made culpable, the guy just says, "Well, that's not my dog. Somebody must have cloned the chip." You know that all the I know what you're gonna say, but all these things are big possibilities. Right. So what difference would the microchip make, is what I'm asking you? Yeah. Well, you see, that's the situation that the minister, Michelle Gildenew, is really using to justify bringing in dog chips. That's one of the issues that they're saying about it, you know. Right, so
that's the real motivation. There are other side issues, if you like, and dogs that are being aggressive or used for fighting are very much a side issue. But the primary reason for doing it is getting dogs back when they get stolen.
Well, the worst thing.
Northern Ireland has the worst record of the United Kingdom.
But you'll appreciate that it's not people like me that are perpetrating those crimes, and I do actually believe that that's a crime, and I'd like to see it made a crime, and actually I would like to see people prosecuted for it. But that brings me on to my major point, which is if we just hired a few more dog wardens and they actually were in the park proactively talking to people, number one, none of our citizens over here, Chris, and this is disgraceful, not one of them knows what the real law is about dogs. They don't know. They literally don't know that they're supposed to have their dog under control in a public place. They don't know what under control means. Although it is a grey area, it definitely isn't some of the behaviour that I see. We have serious issues with responsibility. The interesting thing is that law-abiding citizens who do just want to look after their dogs responsibly end up with a bit more baggage. And really, the people who are going to break the law, who don't buy dog licences and they won't have a dog chip, they won't have a dog licence. They're in the majority, I'm sorry to say, in this country, of people who actually go out and buy a dog, and maybe they get a dog for a year and, you know, they think it's a cute puppy and then they get rid of it and get another one. Those people, they're never going to do it. There's not, unless we physically make them do it, unless we have it.
But if your legislation said that your puppy had to be microchipped before it was sold, that would at least make the dog, or at least a significant proportion of the dogs identifiable.
But it makes the dogs identifiable to the breeder. It doesn't make the dogs identifiable. Maybe what we could do by that is to prove that a breeder bred dogs and sold it to someone who's irresponsible, but there's no line of culpability there to actually take it back to the person and say, look, you need to be more responsible. The only thing that's going to do that is enforcement of the law, whatever the law might be. And we could be doing that now.
Yeah,
but we're not. We definitely aren't doing that now. I mean, I have never in all my life, barring one consultation meeting that I went to where I met the head dog warden, ever met a dog warden. I've owned dogs for 30-odd years. The education is much more important than that,
yes, of course.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
But how you get the dog warden service to be more effective, if that's even possible, I'm not sure that it is. I mean, my personal view is that I would take all the enforcement away from dog wardens. I would give it to the animal health agency that is staffed largely by vets and animal welfare officers. And the money that goes into dog warden service, which is largely wasted in my view, would get transferred to animal health and allow them to do a job much more effectively than dog wardens do.
I mean, as a dog owner, I'm very exasperated about the whole thing. One of the things that did strike me just was that it seems to be that the entire hat that everything's hanging on is this compulsory microchipping, and I cannot for the life of me see how that will make one, you know, even small difference, really. What it will do is it will return dogs on some occasions to people who maybe would have lost them, But some of those people, I mean, I'll tell you from my point of view, I walk dogs for people on occasion, and I have an 0800 number for doing so. And one of the interesting calls that I get is the rehoming of adult dogs. More people want to rehome aggressive breed adult dogs all the time because they simply can't handle them.
Yeah.
And I never expected so many people to just get a dog to 2 years of age and just say, I don't want it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not part of their family. They don't realize it's a responsibility to behave, you know, to be looked after, you know.
It's a common problem, I'm afraid. You know, my perceiving is certainly not going to cure that. I mean, what might help to cure it is if the animal, when you get your Animal Welfare Act, if that says that the person to whom the microchip is registered is responsible for the welfare of that animal, then that actually makes it more likely that the microchip can get registered to the person who actually is responsible.
Mm.
And that then allows you to place the responsibility for the animal's welfare where it should be. So it's a combination of factors.
I suppose my point of view is that when we're spending money or when we're looking at how money's spent, I just don't see that that's the best way to spend it. One of the situations with it as well is the privacy of it and the fact that, I'll just take a quote from the Dog Theft Action Group. Guys, I think is it Neil Elwert, is it? I've actually spoken to a gentleman who runs it, and he's a really nice guy.
Neil Ewart.
Neil Ewart, I do apologise. He's really, really nice man. What's it say here? All database records are held by the manufacturer or supplier, and their agents should comply with the Data Protection Act and comply with DIG, the Dog Identification Group, Database Code of Practice. This assures that our personal information is secure and can only be changed on the production of a unique number stored on the microchip inside our pets. But sure, I can grab that number from 33 centimetres away as you walk by. Isn't it?
Which is not the number on the microchip.
But that's on their system. Do you know? I mean, I know the procedure for it, but I'm just saying that that's actually what they have written down.
Yeah, no, that's not actually correct.
You know, and my difficulty with systems, which, as you may not have guessed from some of the things that I've said to you, I've had a fair bit to do with being around when they were designed, is it just with a PIN code or something like that, say for example you're looking at a regional office somewhere, not in your own organisation, because I realise you would have quite a large organisation with data protection compliance, I'm sure, but some of the smaller animal shelters indeed might even have that on a wall or something, you know, and it's just a question, is somebody coming in and getting it?
The databases, there are actually only three databases.
Mm. Somebody wanted to find out who belonged to a dog, how hard do you think it would be to actually take that number of the dog and get a PIN code out of, say for example, an animal shelter to figure out how to rehome a dog and then turn that into the name and address of that person or turn it into some piece of information? Not so much our officials would worry about it, be more like, you know, somebody stealing a wallet or something. That is more what it would worry, so I'm not necessarily suggesting any of our government people would do that. Honestly, I've got to say, I suppose I haven't read a lot of things that you've said yourself. I probably agree with a lot of the things that I've read that you've said in other places on other issues. I probably don't, I have to say, agree with compulsory microchipping, because I think it's got the wrong balance between privacy, security and health to the dogs. I suppose I would have done a lot of work with mobile phones and things like that in the early days, and they actually changed mobile phones quite significantly after their initial introduction because of the power levels in them, because they were actually kicking out an awful lot of power.
Oh, and frequencies have changed.
Yeah.
Significantly as well, by a factor of about 100, I think, haven't they?
Well, I would have been more, I would have been more to do with the actual handsets and things like that at the time, but it was, I know that there was one of the phones that I had that was something, it was kicking out some absolutely massive amount of power, and they actually took it off the market, but they've never said why they took it off the market, and I'm not implying there's anything wrong with it, but they didn't ever sell it again, and phones got significantly less powerful after that.
I think probably because the batteries went flat too quickly as well.
it could well have been that as well, you know.
One of the very early mobile phones, the batteries were about the size of a house brick.
Some of them are awful.
You're lucky
really
that it lasted for about 3 hours.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that sort of technology has changed. And actually, microchip technology has not changed for 16 years. It's the same frequency. The device itself is completely inert.
But when you look at those studies, have you looked, for instance, at the studies with the mice that actually had the... Have you seen any of these rodent studies at all, no?
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of mice that are bred for experimental purposes are specifically bred with intrinsic viruses that make them prone to humans.
But that control group that was in that particular study, do you know, I haven't got it. I have it somewhere, but I haven't got it just to hand. I don't want to bore you while I'm waiting on it. But... there was a control group in that particular group of mice that didn't have any chemicals or anything else, and they didn't, genetically they were bred to not contain the cancer fighting gene,
right.
But they still did get cancer, and they got as much cancer as the group that were given chemicals, which would seem to prove that the chips are not completely inert. That would be my major problem.
They're electronically inert.
Yeah.
They,
it's the bio bond or something in them, I think, is what they thought.
They're encapsulated in glass, basically.
Mm.
And glass is biologically inert. Because if you think of all the other things that get implanted, the glass encapsulated as well. I mean, all the electronic devices like pacemakers and so on, all implanted and as I understand it, glass encapsulated, which makes them inert. They sit there for years, they're causing problems.
Well, I think it was Bland that actually said that he did feel the glass and other substances that were maybe supposedly inert could cause problems in certain situations, but I mean, I don't know, I haven't got that study sitting here, but it was certainly something that he had said.
Yeah,
so
the other thing about glass is the shape of it, of course. If you get a foreign body type in a glass, so it's conical in shape, then that will move and that will cause problems. Microchips, of course, are cylindrical, therefore much less likely to move.
Well, the issue with size is another thing that somebody raised at a meeting. I hadn't been aware of this, but somebody was saying that, so here, the interesting thing about compulsory microchipping would be somebody would be chipping a dog, say, I don't know, what age, 6 weeks, 5 weeks?
Yeah,
yes.
6 weeks, probably 6 to 8 weeks.
If they did that, is there any issue, say, if you chip, like, I'm trying to think of a really small dog, what about a chihuahua or something like that, where they had said that size was a factor in the actual reaction? Does that...
I mean, size of foreign bodies is not related, and it's generally actually the small, oddly shaped ones that cause the problems, whereas the cylindrical ones don't.
Right.
So I don't think size is an issue in there at all.
Would you be able to tell me of a study where I could find out about that cylindrical versus, do you have anything off the top of your head I could actually look into? So, for example, say to it. It for that long.
Well, you couldn't feel it. It was so deep in the dog's neck.
Oh, really?
Feel it at all. It just about showed up on X-ray.
That's half the time, I think, that if everybody had to do, I suppose, the kind of stuff that we have to do with the carry blues, we clip them, that you probably wouldn't miss it half as much of the things, because obviously you're always fingertip touching the dog everywhere, you know, because you're having to clip it. I do think in a lot of cases it's an advantage as well as a disadvantage. But You've answered most of my questions. I mean, I can't say. Obviously, I feel the way I feel about it. I understand that you have a fair bit of experience and you feel the way that you feel about it. I'll truthfully reflect when I do write it all down what you said to me, and I suppose at the end of the day, well, in terms of the decision the government make, it'll certainly be a decision that they want to make. I'm sure I won't have that much input into it. I'm sorry. Well, you must try. You know, I mean, if you disagree with something, you have to stand up and say it. One of the things that I am doing actually at the moment is I'll put the site up and I'll document it, and that way, if there are a lot of adverse reactions later, and anybody does need to sue the government, I'll just have a clear line going, we started talking to you about this, we gave you these scientific reports that demonstrated this, you made the law, you know, and you decided to make the law based on whatever other opinions that you got, as well as the scientific data. And so clearly you did have the information, so you did know that there was a problem. So, you know, if people do need to reclaim money or recoup money to make sure dogs are properly get the proper medical care, for instance, that will be an issue. That will be something that can be dealt with, you know. So that's really, in terms of what I'm doing, that's as much as, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm a citizen and very much a small, tiny, minuscule wheel in a very large cog that doesn't really revolve around people like me. So I'll put it all on record, what I've said, and like I say, I'll truthfully reflect what you said, and we'll, I suppose we'll, in the long term, I hope I'm wrong and you're right. I would really like that to be the case. I honestly, I would really, see, that is the other thing that does come across whenever I'm dealing with people from animal shelters, is the cognitive dissonance and the whole fact that even there might be a study that might lead to something. It just, they don't want to know about it, because imagine if you did, if you were doing 16,000 dogs a year and maybe 2% or 3% were being hurt by that. That's a massive number of dogs. I mean, I think there's 8 million dogs in the UK, and we're going for compulsory microchip in UK wide. That'd be 160,000 dogs possibly with the cancer. That,
we don't get reports of reactions.
no, I understand. I know. I mean, we could go around that all day, but basically, you're not getting reports of reactions, Chris, because there's no system that compels people to report it, and there's, you know, there's a lot of the information just isn't going to be being got. You know. Honestly, I'm not entirely sure, because my own experience was is that I went along and I had a wee lump taken out of one of my dogs there, the one that I was telling you about, Winnie. And when I had it taken out, the vet even was a bit, he didn't even really particularly want to take it out, but it was on the muscle in the leg, and I thought, I do a lot of running, and I didn't want the dog being in pain, so I had it taken out. But there was never a suggestion. Now, she isn't microchipped, so I'm not suggesting he was doing anything wrong. The gentleman's retired now. But there was never a suggestion that we look at that or we figure out if there's anything wrong with it or whatever. But I'm, like I say, I'm not a veterinarian, so I don't know if there should have been or shouldn't have been. But neither are a lot of owners who maybe would be being asked to pay to biopsy something or pay to autopsy in some cases, and would just say, well, what's the point? I've lost my dog, or the operation's over, you know?
If the lump's nowhere near the microchip, how could it conceivably cause cancer?
Well, some of the studies that I'd read had said that when they do that, that it can't actually move through the, what is it, the lymph system? Lymph. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a veterinarian, so, but I could certainly show you the data if you wanna have a look at the studies. You'd have a much better chance of deciphering it and working out what it is than I would. I'm an electronics guy. I'm not a biological guy. As you're out there as a dog owner, you're looking for the best advice that you can get, and you're looking for non-partisan advice. And you're also equally trying to make sure that the system is honest and that things aren't being drafted in for profit as opposed to for the actual animal welfare. So, I mean, that, for me, that's the most important thing, you know. Does it actually cost? This is one thing that's been said to me time and time again, because you should really talk to Pet Detect about that, because they actually put up, oh, can I find it? It's a real, just a real. A real cheesy sales quote, actually, if you want to go and have a look at the website, about that, perfect for animal shelters looking to increase their revenue. Yeah. And it was one of those things that somebody from a rescue actually got very annoyed whenever I said that I felt it might be profit motivated. You give them away, is that?
Yes, we do. Well, I mean, it depends who you are. If you're on benefits,
Hmm.
we do it for nothing. We do all our own. For people who are not on benefits, we do it for 10 quid, which probably just about covers that.
There's 350 to buy. There's 350 to buy. I think they want this, so that would be. I'm sure it would have had some pound for the rest of it, if not massively profitable. I didn't know that they were talking about a suggestion over here of them being for £30.
Yeah, that's probably what it cost you for that 25
cents per day. Yeah, you know, that's very different. That is one thing. I will clear that up. I have that on my website, and I'll just sort that out, actually. So you do them for £10, do you? Excuse me, Lisa. Bear with me, Lisa. Sorry about that. Hey, come here. Shh, calm down. Come on, do it. I'd say that was the postman. That was one of the things. There's a lot of misconceptions out there. Some of the stuff on that site was downright cheesy. I mean, things like send us back the microchips that you made mistakes with, and well, I think they use them as part of some saddle scheme or whatever. And let's face it, who doesn't make mistakes? You know, and you're sort of reading through, in 3 hours you can be a fully trained pet microchip implanter and things like that. I mean, one of the studies that I looked at, there was a wee chihuahua called Charlie Brown. I don't know, did you hear anything about that? No. It was a dog in America, and it was a qualified vet that actually implanted the chip, but the dog just bled to death on the table when he did it, and they couldn't figure out for the life of him why.
That wouldn't be the chip, it'd be
something else. Well, it's how deep he's put it in, presumably.
Hemophilic, or it would have angiostrongylus, or one of those sort of things.
Mm. But you can imagine, so I'm looking at him, he was a qualified veterinarian. He said he did all the blood tests, and they still couldn't find any conclusive reason why it happened. But I'm looking at people maybe who are volunteers, not necessarily for yourself, but for anyone, who are coming out with fairly limited experience, and imagine, you can just imagine that situation being a complete nightmare, you know? That is one of the major worries. It's just 3 hours, and people are out there, you know, implanting dogs. That to me, there's something inherently wrong with that.
Yeah, absolutely. It should have gone. When we train people, they do a one-day course, which has all the background, and they have to actually implant dogs in front of the instructor to show that they're competent to do it. They then have to do 70 within 70 weeks supervised, so that somebody's checking it.
Really, I'd say if anything, as a dog owner, scared me more. I just thought that it should be something where, if you're going to make something compulsory in my country, I would prefer a vet to be doing it.
Yes.
You know, I would almost, so I wouldn't be one of the people taking advantage, maybe the £10, I'd rather pay 30, if I absolutely have to have it done, I'll have it done by my local vet who I trust, and make sure it's safe, you know, because, I mean, as safe as it can be anyway, but when you look on to some of the situations, it does just seem like it's an industry that's very much driven by finance as opposed to by real love of animals. That was my particular takeaway from it.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, I'm sure I'm boring you at this point, and you've answered all of my questions. If there's anything you want to ask me, come back to me at any stage.
No,
you can't do.
No problem.
All right.
Lovely.
Thank you very much, Chris. Thanks. Bye.